Chapter 19. Trust the Messenger. The Man Beside You. Fane of Rebirth. The Phalanx, Inner System Gulf. The grey ship docked with the Phalanx as it broke Terran orbit. Huskarls surrounded Mercedian Loken as they crossed the docking limb. All around them, the Phalanx trembled as it pushed into open space and towards its enemy. Mercedes recognized some of the sights they passed. Statues of heroes, images inlaid in stone, floors of black and white marble. She'd been here before, years ago, after they had fled Istvan on the Eisenstein. She remembered walking through the vengeful spirit, Maggard and the soldiers all around her, the sound of the ship, the silence that followed them as they went further. Something was wrong. She was walking through the Phalanx. Loken at her side, a wall of imperial fists around her. "Dawn," she said, feeling the word rise from within. She felt disconnected. Something deep in her mind was screaming that it was almost too late, that she was almost out of time. There were things moving in the root of her memory and mind, vast unseen gears turning. "I must reach Dawn." Her feet were still moving. A buzzing had started in her head that might have been static, or water falling down onto rock, or wind blowing through a dry valley filled with skulls. "We're almost there," replied Loken.
"Why?" asked Tsu Kasen.
She was almost running to keep up with Dawn as he strode into his sanctum. Glow globes lit as he crossed the black marble floor.
"What can a remembrancer have to tell us?"
Arcamus and a squad of Huskarls spread through the room, feet ringing on the floor. Dawn stopped and turned to look at her. His gaze almost made her stumble. His eyes were dark mirrors in a face of carved stone.
"Because once before messengers came to me in the ship. They told me the truth that we all now live. That the War Master was a betrayer. I did not believe them then. I did not want to hear."
Tsu Kasen thought she saw something then, something in the deep distance of his eyes, something she could not place in a being like Rogel Dawn.
"It is not often that we get to learn from the mistakes of the past," said Dawn. "Mercedes Oloton showed me the truth. Here, in this room."
He turned his head to look at a point in open space, as though something moved in the still air.
"She showed me what she had seen, and that changed everything."
He looked back at Tsu Kasen. She could feel herself frowning, a doubt forming on her lips. A shrill alarm rang out. Tsu Kasen gasped. Blackness, a feeling of nausea, a sound of screaming. She blinked and put a hollow monocle to her eye. Light flooded her vision as alert information poured onto the display. Cold flooded her.
"Lord Praetorian,"
she said, staring at the tactical data as the sound of alarms rose to a clamour.
"Something is happening in the inner system."
Static was suddenly washing through the Voxlink. The hollow monocle shorted out. She stumbled back. A sound bubbled up in her earpiece, rustling, laughing, saying something that sounded like words.
"It's all around you. The only name you will hear."
"Lord,"
she began.
"Bring the ship to full alert," said Dawn.
And began striding for the doors. Mercedes stumbled. The floor of the passage met her hand as she caught herself. Lights popped and bubbled in her eyes. Voices and memories tumbled over each other in her skull.
"Take the iterator and the remembrancer back to their quarters," said Malachurst.
Maggard shoving her through a door.
"Euphrate, what's wrong? You never talk like..."
"You need to understand, Mercedes."
"I understand you have a story," she said.
The wolf stood before her, the white fur of its back silver beneath the moonlight.
"A particularly entertaining one. I'd like to remember it for posterity."
The wolf turned, its teeth a smile of sorrow.
"Which story?"
"Horus killing the Emperor."
"Where?"
she managed, pushing herself up as Loken reached to help her.
"Where are we?"
"The Phalanx," he said. His eyes were dark, human, not the eyes of a wolf.
"The phalanx,"
she repeated, blinking, feeling the world turn around her. The eyes of five imperial fists held on her, red in black and yellow helms.
"The phalanx, yes, of course, Rogel Dorn. There's not much time."
"Mercedes, it's all right."
"No, there's something else. I need to see him."
She forced her legs to move. Something was happening. Something that she could feel but not understand. There were doors opening in front of them. On. On further through the night, through the passages of the vengeful spirit, to a door...
"What was that?"
she heard herself say, as the glow globes flickered in their settings.
"Something is happening," said Loken,
but his voice seemed further away now.
"System-wide anomalies.
There is something wrong with the Vox." She had been here before, in these corridors before, carrying memories, images spooled in her head, blood and betrayal and the truth. What had she forgotten? The light spluttered again. She could see a set of doors in front of her. She had been here before, with Keela, with Garrow.
"What's that?"
growled one of the imperial fists. There was a noise, a hissing like static, like the whisper of wind blowing through dry valleys. Like a voice. Dawn's sanctuary, the phalanx. She had been here before. The lights blinked red.
"What's happening?" asked Loken.
"Full alert,"
replied one of the Huskarls.
"Something is happening in the inner system gulf."
The doors were opening in front of them.
"We need to get you secured,"
said one of the imperial fists.
"I need to see Lord Dorn," she mumbled. "I need to..."
"There is someone speaking on the Vox,"
said another of the Huskarls. The shove of Maggard's hand on her back, pushing her through the door.
"Greetings, Mercedes Oriton,"
said Malachurst, looking up at her. His eyes were the eyes of a wolf. Loken had stopped moving suddenly. She looked at him, blinking.
"Sounds like a voice," he said, "trying to break through the interference."
The sound was hissing in her ears, rising and falling.
"Here."
"Dorn," she gasped. "I need to see Rogel Dorn now."
"Samis."
"That sound, that voice," he said. "I've heard that voice before."
"Samuis."
Loken's gun was in his hand. The Huskarls were moving, turning. Shadows were spreading up the wall. Everything was distant, like something happening on a picked screen hung just in front of her face. There was someone behind her. Just behind her. A shadow.
"He is here."
Loken stepped around to look at her.
"What did you say?"
She shrugged, feeling more words coming to her tongue. Her muscles were moving, but she was not moving them.
"Samus is here,"
she said,
and backhanded Loken into the wall. He struck it with a sound of shearing ceramite.
Mercedes looked at her hand. It was red. Guns roared around her, red fire blinking, red on her hand. She tried to take a step, put her hand out, and fell. A thin hand caught her arm, steadied her.
"That's it. You are all right. I have you."
She blinked. Nihilus was standing next to her, holding her arm and shoulder, looking at her with black eyes in a pale, pale face. The face of a friend. The rest of the world had become blurred, a tableau through which something was moving faster than sight, clawed and furred and toothed. Slowly, oh so slowly, the yellow-armoured warriors were coming apart. Red. The world was bright and dark and red.
"But you were not here,"
she said, looking at the face of the navigator standing just next to her. There was blood on his face, she noticed, splattered right across him, bright and dripping. Nyla shrugged, smiled. And now he looked nothing like a human, and nothing like a friend.
"I am always here,"
he said.
"I am the man beside you."
Inner system gulf. The comet shrine blazed back into being. Light poured out of the point where it had vanished. Lightning leapt across the gulfs of space, brighter than the vanished sunlight. Every soul asleep under the light of the sun woke with a cry. Every person awake, from space marine to child, felt the touch of knives on their skin. A vortex of energy poured into the hole punched through reality by the comet. Circling demons were caught by the hurricane force and were unmade. The storm narrowed, became a point, became a blade. It dragged through the skin of reality, ripping back along the arc that the comet shrine had passed in the last decades. The lips of the wound peeled back. The light of paradox spilled out, bubbling, flowing, curdling the dark across tens of millions of kilometres. The warp breach gaped, drooling half-formed matter, a bloody smile opening in the dark. For an instant, it was the only thing that moved. Stars and planets were still in the face of this violation. The black sun hung in a bleached sky, a mute and cold disk. Then the slit tore wide. Matter vomited into being. Half-formed ideas of teeth and limbs, of beasts and mouths, tumbled over each other, writhing as they dissolved and coagulated. The sun blazed back to light, screaming. Across Terra, every person looking at the sky could see it. A burning wound across the night, or a scar of midnight in the daylight. Through it came ships from the realm beyond, dragging cloaks of insects and shadow. Winged creatures circled them, flying like birds in the gale of etheric energy. Bolts of lightning leapt from the wound, strobing across space. And here were the vessels that had been absent from the weeks of war already waged. Here was the Conqueror, its white hull red with smoking gore. Here were the ships of the World Eaters, their murder cries echoing from the Vox, and the voice of every legionary. Angron stood on the hull of his capital ship, a vast and ragged shadow, axe raised to the sunlight, roaring his fury at the circle of terror. There were the ships of the Emperor's children, fuming musk and grey dust from jewel-crusted hulls. In the guts of the pride of the Emperor, Fulgrim coiled and looked out through the eyes of every soul in his fleet and laughed with delight. And there, following the rest, like the chariot of a king come in triumph, came the vengeful spirit. Warships flanked it. Demons flew as its heralds. High on its hull, on the fortress that it bore upon its back, Horus, warmaster, first son of the Emperor, chosen champion of the dark gods, looked out at Terra. The seat of his father's empire glimmered beyond the prow of his ship. Shadow bled from him, and the demons that held to the shadows of his court hissed and bowed their heads as the light of the sun touched his face. The ships poured from the rift, spreading out in a swarm of glinting lights. 100, 1,000, 10 times 1,000, more and more that had been waiting in the warp for the way to open to the heart of the solar system. Even if Horus's forces had used both the Elysian and Chthonic gates, it would have taken such a force days to translate back into reality. Now they swam from the warp into the gulfs of the inner system. Not an army or a fleet, but a host sent by the will of gods and the art of mortals. The ships clustered and divided as their engines caught on the cold vacuum and turned them towards Mars and Luna and the small orb of Terra, all alone in the dark. Horus watched, and then gave a single nod. "Begin," he said. The warp.
"I am a remembrancer. I'm recording his experiences for posterity."
"Remembrance. A strange idea to take to the stars, I have always thought."
"I don't understand."
She thought of looking around, but Malighurst's gaze held her.
"I thought I was to be returned to my quarters."
"Tell me,"
said Malighurst, his power armour buzzing as he shifted.
"Does she trust you?"
"What?"
"Does Captain Loken trust you?"
I don't..."
"He favours you, talks to you, shares his remembrances with you. I think that he trusts you a great deal, Mercedes Oliton."
The equerry to the War Master had smiled, and unwilled, she began to turn to run. A hand on her shoulder stopped her dead. Heavy fingers squeezed with the promise of bone-breaking force.
"You see, Mistress Ullerton," said Mallachhurst, "we do not trust him at all, and we need to be sure. We need to know what he hides from us. We need to know which way he will choose. I have my suspicions as to that, but the War Master wants to be certain."
He nodded, smiled.
"Loken was a favoured son, after all. You can forgive a father wishing to give his son every chance. And so you are going to help us see Captain Loken clearly."
Mercedes could not move. There was something behind her, a shadow, breath on the back of her neck.
"You remembrancers wanted to see the Great Crusade," continued Mallachhurst.
He turned aside, and she could see a low stone table just behind him. Candles burned above it. The smell of scorched human hair filled her nose. There were objects on the table. A silver knife, a brass bowl filled with water, a pile of finger bones, a silver coin, and a human eye, still leaking fluid onto the cold stone, looking up at her with a grey-flecked gaze.
"You wanted to know the truth, to look into all the places where your curiosity took you," said Mallachhurst.
His fingers traced a sign in the air. She tried to move, but could not. The shape Mallachhurst had drawn burned red, bleeding in her sight.
"Well, now you will do just that, Mistress Ullerton. You will see, and we will look through your eyes."
He reached down, picked up the knife. The rune, burning in the air, glowed. Everything was going black, rushing past like the embers of a fire pulled apart by a gale. Hot breath prickled on the back of her head. A hand touched her shoulder. She felt the tips of claws. Mallachhurst was very close now, looming above her, the buzz of his armour aching in her teeth, a rank incense smell coiling from him. And now he was stepping towards her, knife rising to her face, to her left eye. He slowed, his movements blurring like a picked capture run at 1/10 speed.
"You see," growled a voice from behind her. "The eyes, windows to the soul. And what were you but a set of eyes watching the world?"
The tip and edge of the silver knife filled her sight. It was all she could see.
"You never know what use things will be."
Mercedes tried to draw breath. The scream in her throat burned but did not sound.
"All they wanted was to see what you saw, to know what you knew, to use your insight."
A chuckle through sharp teeth.
"So limited, but the seed was planted, the bridge and link made, and the warp remembers."
"I..." began Mercedes. "I was used."
A laugh now. A full high laugh that might have been Nihlus, or Keeler, or Loken, or the howl of wolves in a winter-shrouded forest. And the image of Mallachhurst, the knife, and the stone table vanished. A view across the mountains of terror blinked into being behind high windows. A breeze was sliding through a half-open door to the enclosed garden beyond. The thin curtain stirred. The polished wood floor was warm beneath Mercedes' feet.
"Nothing like being back home," said a voice behind her.
She turned, half expecting not to be able to move. The face of Euphrates Keeler looked up at her. Coloured tiles and beads lay on the floor around her, some broken, some ground to dust. There was blood on Keeler's grey robe, a wet, bright splatter from forehead to fingers. She was picking her teeth with a piece of broken glass.
"You were never Keeler," said Mercedes.
"No,"
said the bloody face of Keeler.
"But you wanted to believe so much that it made it an easy choice of what face to wear."
"Where is she?"
The bloody woman on the floor laughed.
"Really? At this point, you are still worried about your friend?"
Mercedes began to take a step forwards, anger rising. She froze, blocking in place.
"My, my. There is still some strength in you,
said the image of Keela, standing, the shard of glass still in her hand, held loose, dripping blood.
Euphrates Keela, the real Euphrates Keela, still lives, still follows her lies about the false god emperor. But it was never her speaking to you.
Mercedes felt a hollowness open in her.
Oh, you are wondering about before. About the dream and message about Loken. About saying goodbye. Did you like that touch?
Mercedes tried to force her jaw to open. The mouth in Keela's face twitched, and she shrugged. Mercedes gasped. When...
On the vengeful spirit, of course. In one of those slivers of time that you don't even realize you don't remember. That is the strange thing about being so sure of your memory. It makes hiding things easy. You never doubt it because you believed in yourself.
Malachurst.
A little bit of sorcery used for a simple task. They really did just want to know where Garvey Loken stood. As though it weren't obvious.
The image of Keela snorted.
They wanted an eye on him, watching from where he would not expect.
The thing raised the shard of glass and pointed it at Mercedes' left eye.
So they put that eye in you. It didn't turn out to be much use in the end. But it was there.
But now... Malachurst could not have known that I would be here.
The thing was shivering slightly. Its grin was wide. Too wide, and leaking red at the corners. The wind was moaning as it rose outside of the windows.
Of course not. But the connection was there, the door made. This path you have walked, this end that you serve, is a later improvisation by Horus. A use of available assets.
The message, the design in the warp, none of it was real?
No. All of it was real, said the thing.
It was looking at its arm like a child at a toy that it did not understand. It placed the tip of the glass against the skin. Black ran from the point.
The best lies are truth.
There is a great design in the warp that is undoing the barrier between worlds.
And delivering the War Master to the heart of the solar system. You... are a part of it. A small part.
But a part?
Dawn could see the edges of it, and he is disposed to trust messengers. Especially messengers bearing the truth. Especially messengers he has trusted before.
It looked up at her. Its eyes were red, blood red and smoking.
Especially you.
The wind exploded through the windows around them. Shards of glass spun through the air, struck the thing that looked like Keela, ripped through flesh and bone, and it was stepping forwards, skin and blood falling off it in the razor gale. The image of Nihlus was underneath, tall and spindle-limbed. A Mercedes saw herself again on the prison ship, alone at the controls of the shuttle, arriving on the Antaeus alone, talking to herself in her cabin, following the blood trail to find the engine seer hiding on the ship's bridge. She had been alone all the time, part of her mind locked from noticing that Nihlus was never mentioned by anyone else, and never there when she wasn't by herself.
It was all me,
she said, feeling the shock roll through her as the creature got closer. Nihlus was gone now, too. It was a juddering shadow now.
We are here for you,
said a voice. A voice that sounded like it was stitched together from a chorus of howls. She saw the red light blinking through the corridor of the Antaeus, the troopers who had come to kill her becoming red splatter and shreds as the shadow tore them apart.
He was not trying to kill me, she said.
It was... No! We are the end and the death, but not yours. Not yet.
The flashes of red memory vanished. Somewhere far off, someone was shouting. She could hear the rattle of gunfire and the boom of explosions. It was dark, the night air frosted. A red sickle moon carved just beyond the reach of bare branches. A pool of black water lay before her. Ice ran around its edge. A figure that looked like a wolf, crossed with a skinned man, rose from the water. Freezing water scattered from matted fur as it grew.
"We are here,"
it said. Seventh Fane of the Selenar, Luna. The gunfire ripped through the servitor. Abaddon rammed through the wreckage of its torso. Pieces of armour and flesh splattered across the ground. Another half-machine clanked forwards on tracks. It fired. A stream of rounds struck Abaddon, his helm lit with damage. Chunks of armour tore from his chest. He ran into the gunfire. Behind him, his Justerin were firing down into the side corridors. They were deep under the surface of Luna, in the warren of smooth black stone divided by circular doors and twisted into spirals like the inside of a seashell. The air was still and cold. Mica and crystal flecks gleamed in the walls as gunfire shattered the dark. Even echoing with the sounds of battle, the warren seemed quiet, as if the weight of its silence dragged the sound from the air. Abaddon felt it pull memories into the moments between the muzzle flashes, old memories held deep but not forgotten. Sharp silver and flesh, water and blood, darkness and blinding pain. This was the domain of the Selenar, the seat of the lunar gene cults, the place of his rebirth. Before him lay a circular door set in the curve of the passage wall. Low-relief images moved across its surface in silver, figures with crescent headdresses and burning torches. Spiralling halos of symbols wreathed them. Tau Aleph, Gamma Kaf. Beyond lay one of the last fanes of the gene cult, a sanctuary against time and decline. They had come this far, hacking and killing without pause. Most of the resistance came from servitors following blunt battle programs, but those half-machines still had weapons that could kill a legionary. A figure of piston limbs and armour plates unfolded from a niche in the wall and launched itself at Abaddon. The human flesh that guided it was lost beneath a frame of tarnished silver and black carbon. Stretched out, it would have stood taller than Abaddon, but its power had been bunched and folded into the shape of a monstrous feline, six-limbed and blade-clawed. Its head was a fanged mask with a mane of chromed hair. It was a sacred sentinel, one of the guardian beasts of the Selenar's inner sanctums. Lightning wreathed its jaws as it leapt. Abaddon jerked backwards. The guardian beast landed in the space where he had been. He raised his power fist. The beast sprang at him, fore and mid-limbs wide, jaws open. It was quick, very, very quick. But he had killed quicker prey. He punched his fist into its mouth. The fist's power field activated as it made contact. Its head exploded. Shards of silver and brain matter struck the tunnel walls. Its movement did not stop. Nerve clusters and brain segments drove it on. Damage runes lit in Abaddon's helm as the beast's limbs fastened on his arm and shoulder. He snarled and lifted the creature from the ground. It was twisting, its hind limbs reversing to arc up over its back like scorpion stings. Abaddon pivoted, battering it into the tunnel wall. Armour splintered. He could see the lightning wreathing the thing's claw blades. Heavy rounds tore through the thing's body. Pulped meat and twisted metal showered in every direction. It lashed out. Abaddon brought up his bolter and fired a stream of rounds into it. Chrome and carbon splinters rang against his faceplate. He hurled the remains against the wall and dumped another burst of bolter fire into it before what was left of it could move.
"Hog kills," growled Erskar, closing with Abaddon, Reaper cannon still smoking from the fire he had poured into the beast. "But you didn't need all that much help."
Abaddon looked at the chosen warrior's red helm. The silver-filled scars glinted across its snout like teeth behind a grin. Abaddon laughed, the sound blending with the sound of gunfire. For a second he felt the weight of the moment lift. He had come back to the place that had made him, that had made the Legion that was everything. Unlike that moment of birth, he was not alone.
"Will you ever be anything but a jackal, brother?" he said over a direct vox. "Oh, that it," growled Erskar.
Then his head twitched as he looked beyond Abaddon.
"I smell the dung of gods and priests."
Abaddon turned to see Leak advancing down the passage. Shapes made of shadow and cold light spiralled around him. The blade slaves walked behind their master, swords drawn, bodies bloated with power, as the demons within the blades rode their flesh.
"A last temple to old lies,"
said Laoc, looking up at the doors. Abaddon felt his lip curl, but did not answer.
"Breach it,"
he said. Reavers in black power armour ran forwards to clamp clusters of melter charges in place. Abaddon's chosen formed around him, guns braced, weapons lit, and sweating lightning.
"Detonating!"
came the call, and the silver door vanished. A blast wave of superheated molten metal broke over Abaddon and his warriors. They did not flinch. They went forwards. Guardian servitors bounded through the glowing cloud. Bolt and autocannon rounds tore through silvered armour. Abaddon saw the head of Gedephron's power mace crash through the chest of a beast shaped like a bear of black iron. He saw another one fasten its gaze on him and begin to pounce. He fired, pounding its body to shards as it reached for him. He was out of the other side of the debris cloud. Actinic light filled the chamber beyond. It was spherical, its walls curving up and up to a circular opening set at its apex. Staircases and platforms spiraled up the walls. Pods frosted with crystal hung from spun carbon cable in the central void. Abaddon could see clusters of vials and silver coolant tubes nested inside the pods. At the far end of the chamber was a lone figure, hovering just above the ground. Grey gauze billowed around her on the currents of false gravity. A crest of silver tubes rose from her back to halo her head. A silver mask, moulded into an expression of false serenity, hid her face. She twisted in the air as the Justarian burst from the debris cloud. Abaddon could see a spiralled arrangement of crystal pipes rising from the floor in front of her. Her hands were moving between vials of liquid, combining fluids in a spinning device. For an instant, the black eyes of the woman's mask met Abaddon's gaze. Buzzing curtains of energy unfurled across the room as Abaddon and his brothers advanced. Figures in segmented black armour with sprung legs bounded forwards. Energy beams snapped out. Bolt rounds exploded on walls of glowing force. Abaddon was charging forwards, his strides cracking the black stone floor. The curtains of energy were changing, flicking out and then snapping back into place in different positions. He saw Echeron from the second Reaver's squad split by a sheet of glowing light as it appeared. The halves of his body fell to the floor, burning. Black lightning reached from behind him and exploded a guardian servitor as it sprang at Abaddon. He twisted to see Laoc keeping pace with him, one of his blade slaves at his side.
"You won't reach her in time," called Laoc. "This is a void maze. If they have power to keep it active, it will protect her until it is too late."
"There is a way through," snarled Abaddon.
Part of his mind had already read the shifting pattern of the energy fields as they activated. Read them, and seen that there was a flaw.
"Too slow,"
was all Laoc said. Abaddon felt something shift in the air. The taste of burnt sugar formed on his tongue. A high note, like the sound of breaking glass, drawn out to the point of pain. The world stuttered. Laoc was moving past Abaddon, his blade slave charging with raised sword. Abaddon saw a fresh curtain of energy unfold into being across their path in the stopped clock moment. Shadows were spilling from Laoc. The blade slave struck the energy field. Light and dark flashed out. Every scrap of shadow became a pool of blinding light, every light a hole into night. The sword screamed as its edge cut. A wound opened in the energy field, haloed by cold light and sparks. Laoc raised his staff as the sword cut and spoke a word. Silence screamed in Abaddon's ears. He tasted jagged iron on his tongue and in his throat. The cut in the energy curtain ripped wider, and beyond it the layers of fields parted. Laoc had gone still now. His hand was smoking where it gripped his staff. Blood was running from the bottom edge of his mask. Abaddon was moving forwards through the opening, gun rising, eyes fixed on the woman at the centre of the room. The devices and vials in her hand were spinning, the fluids inside fusing into dark red. He did not understand the ways of the Selenar. But he did not need to understand their mysteries to know what she was doing. She was Heliosa 78, sole surviving matriarch of the Selenar, and in her hands she was mixing death with which to poison the last remains of all that her kind held sacred. In these halls the gene seed of the legions had been multiplied and implanted, and here the means to do that again remained. It was a prize great enough that Horus had sent his most favoured son to secure it, a victory beyond breaking the defences of Luna. Luna would become a birthplace for warriors again, but now their war would not be in distant stars, but on the surface of the world that hung in the sky above. But not if he failed. He saw her half turn to look at him as the curtains of energy split. Layak was beside him, holding out his staff. The guardian beast rose from a hole in the floor. Its shape was that of a lion crossed with a scorpion, skinned in graphite and oxidized bronze. It bounded into Layak. The priest spun, but the beast was faster. It struck Layak and cannoned him back off his feet. Armor tore, blood scattered across black stone.